This is a special edition of the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Welcome to this special edition of the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Unlike regular episodes where we have co-hosts, a guest, and a number of segments, special editions have a single topic. They are usually meant for interviews or extended reports that are too long for our regular show. We really hope you enjoy this Airplane Geeks Podcast special edition, and let's get started. This is Max Flight from the Airplane Geeks Podcast. You're listening to the second and final collection of interviews from the AOPA Aviation Summit, held September 22nd through the 24th, 2011, in Hartford, Connecticut. I think you'll find some pretty interesting folks amongst the people I talk with. Be sure to go back and enjoy the additional interviews in part one at airplanegeeks.com. I'm looking at the Kansas State University booth, and I'm here with Lindsay.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Dreiling. I'm an admissions rep with Kansas State University and also a graduate of the program. I graduated in professional pilot and also their management.
Well, fantastic. Now, tell me a little bit more about the kind of program that Kansas State University offers.
Sure. We actually offer three different options. You can come in with just the certificates as well as associates and bachelor's. Associate's degree would be a two-year degree program, where bachelor's is a four-year. We offer those four-year degree programs in professional pilot, aviation maintenance, avionics, airport management, air traffic control, and also unmanned aerial systems.
Oh, interesting. Which of those are the most popular these days?
Probably the top two would be the professional pilot program as well as the aviation maintenance program. We have about 250 students in those programs.
I was going to ask you about the student population. The unmanned part of it, how is that growing in interest?
It is. That is one of our most popular program as well as growing in interest. When we started out, we started about 2 years ago with the unmanned aerial systems, and we had, I think maybe five students in the first class, and it has grown to about 26 students this past year. We actually had our first graduate in that program, and he has gone out. He's actually working on a military contract. Typical pay is going to be, for him when he is working military contract overseas, about $120,000. So it's a very popular program right now.
Yeah, I can see why. And that's unmanned vehicles are obviously kind of growing in popularity and so forth. So your connection to aviation, how did you get involved or interested in aviation?
Sure. It's one of those things. I was one of those born pilots, wanted to be in aviation ever since I was young. Growing up, wrote about Amelia Earhart, loved her, had to investigate about her and write different projects on her. And I actually went into the university, graduated, like I said, in the professional pilots, and then started to get more into the educational side. So now I work with aviation admissions. We actually fly out and do a lot of conventions. We also fly to air shows and kind of get our name out that way and talk with prospective students.
How much flying do you do, and what do you fly?
Sure. Well, typically now I was a flight instructor, and for our flight instructors, we hire a lot of our students back on for flight instruction. They typically will fly every day, and I did when I was a flight instructor. Now I don't fly as often, maybe once a month, just because of flight shows and things like that. And as the winter comes around, probably not as often. But it's one of those nice things that as a flight instructor, you can actually do it while you're still a student as well, so that you can build up that flight time. Typically, you'll graduate with about 300 hours. If you're a flight instructor, they can graduate with over 1,000 hours.
Okay, interesting. Tell me a little bit about the students. What are students after these days?
Sure. Most of them are going in for their career paths. We see a lot of students that want to go into airlines, into corporate, for those main flight positions. We also see management growing as well. So a lot of our students that have gone into a management position, they may be working for accident investigation. They might be airport managers. So it's kind of a different part of aviation that you don't always hear about, but it's out there.
And do they have, do they have the passion in their bellies, or are they just trying to get a job?
It's all about the passion. With aviation enthusiasts, it seems to be that way. Yep, a lot of them that I talk to are, like I said, born to do this and just said, hey, you know, I love aviation. This is what I wanted to do all my life, and I don't care what I'm getting paid. I'm just wanting to go into aviation.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's pretty typical of people in this business. There's just a lot of passion to go around. And you can see it here at the show. It's been fantastic in that regard. So if people are interested in learning more about Kansas State program, the website is?
The website is www.salina.kansasstateuniversity.com, or for short, you can just do sal.ksu.edu.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate you talking to us.
Thank you.
So I'm speaking with Sean Collins. Now, Sean, you are part of the AOPA organization, correct?
That's correct.
What do you do with AOPA?
I work in the Pilot Information Center.
And what's that all about?
Well, we're actually a group of pilots, and that's what we're there for, as a resource to other pilots.
So what kinds of resources? I mean, the pilots come with questions or issues or problems, or what sorts of things do you address?
Pretty much anything aviation. If it's a question about regulations or flight training or I need to find a flight school, that's what we're there for.
And how long have you been with AOPA?
Just over 4 years.
Yeah. And so you're a pilot yourself?
I am, commercial pilot. Yeah.
What? How did you get started in aviation? What was the bug that launched you?
Well, I've kind of had that stereotype of a dream where I knew from age 3 that I was going to be a pilot. And I was fortunate that I was able to go to college for it and became one.
So how is the organization doing in terms of membership? Is it stable? Is it growing, declining? What are we seeing these days?
Just being up front, that's not my area of expertise. But for the most part, we're seeing it's for the most part pretty stable. Naturally, we'd like to see it grow a lot more just for the benefit of the industry. For the most part, we're doing pretty well.
That sounds great. That sounds good. This has been a great event so far. Is this your first one of these that you've been to?
This is my first summit. Usually I participate in Sun and Fun and Oshkosh, but I volunteered this year to come to Summit. So, yeah.
So how many Oshkosh shows have you been to?
Actually, two of each. Two at Sun and Fun and two at Oshkosh. So,
just between you and me, which is your favorite?
Hard to say. I think I like the weather a little better at Sun and Fun, but... Yeah. Oshkosh has everything. So,
So what are we looking at here? We've got a lot of material out on a table. What is this all about?
Well, AOPA is one of our big initiatives is to interest people into flight training and being a part of aviation. So these are just some little gifts that, you know, to help people remember who AOPA is and keep them interested. Our focus at this booth, is also to emphasize getting women in aviation.
Yes, that's kind of been a perennial issue.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. We want to get everybody interested in aviation, but here we're focusing on trying to increase the female population.
Do you think we're making progress? Are we seeing some results in your opinion?
In my opinion, we are. I mean, I don't have the statistics or anything, but I definitely have seen more of an interest myself over the last few years.
So. That's good. I think that's important. So we can all... there's another question. What can we do to help facilitate that?
Grab a friend and take them flying. That's really the best advice I have. Just ask them if they were interested, and if they are, take advantage of it. Grab a hold and take them flying.
So I see this website, letsgoflying.com.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. That website was designed for people who, for the most part, have no real aviation background, but they've always been interested in it. So here's an opportunity for them to get started. It shows them what they need to do, where they need to go. It's kind of like the roadmap for becoming a pilot.
And this sounds like something that those of us who are already in or interested in aviation could use maybe as a resource to help other people, to point other people to this site, letsgoflying.com.
Absolutely. That's actually a great thought, and I would encourage all pilots to go there because it'll be a great resource.
All right, fantastic. Sean, thanks for taking a minute to talk with us.
Thanks very much.
I'm speaking with one of the attendees at the event. What's your name?
Lindsay.
Lindsay, why are you here?
I'm here just to see everything. And there's a lot of different stuff that's coming out, a lot of different products I want to see, a lot of the vendors, a lot of the companies. There's just a lot of things I want to see, especially the organization. So.
Now, what's your connection with aviation?
I was a student pilot. I got my pilot's license over the summer. So.
Oh, excellent. Outstanding. So are you doing much flying?
I am.
So, Lindsay, maybe tell me a little bit about getting your pilot's license. How was that experience for you?
Getting my pilot's license was a lot different than I expected it to be. I had read a lot of the blogs. I researched it pretty extensively, and everything that I had read was a lot different than I actually experienced.
In what ways? Tell us.
When I first went to one of the flight schools, they kind of told me that it was going to be up and down, that it was going to be somewhat of a roller coaster. You'd experience different challenges along the way, but there are certain things that you just don't really anticipate. You meet your instructors, and I actually did look at a couple different instructors, different schools, different flight options, and still just the dynamic between the instructor, I think that that's really like you talk about that a lot, but it's the most important thing is...
That's really good advice. In fact, we've talked about that a lot on the podcast when we look at the fallout rates among student pilots, which is surprisingly high. And that's what you just said is one of the conclusions that some people have come to, that there isn't always a good match between the student and the instructor.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And a lot of the best instructors I've found, they don't actually teach at the flight schools. So they're really tough to find, and sometimes it goes by getting a referral from someone else, talking to different pilots and finding out what worked best for them and different options. And ultimately, I think you find that with your ground school too, like whether it's better you want to use the books, whether you'd like to be in a 141, and whatever ends up working best for you. I mean, I found that a lot with a lot of the test preparation and stuff like that. You go between the book, you watch the stuff online, and then the interactive courses, and so it's kind of a mix of different things as to what works best for you. A lot of the video stuff I found was very helpful, but also just being able to fly and then go back to that stuff. Think about like what you were doing with your altimeter at that time, like what, like when you have to reset it and different things like that. It's more useful than actually just reading it in the book. So
now, are you in the aviation industry, or is this just an outside passion for you?
I'd like to be. I'm kind of a hanger-at. I've been hanging around the airport for quite some time, but it's recent for me. I was actually pursuing another degree, and it was something that was offered at one of the local schools, and so I was very lucky to come across it and be able to do my ground school as part of a 141 course, and there's only one of those in Connecticut, so I was exceptionally lucky.
Is there an aviation dream job that you would love to have?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think they're all my dream jobs, really. There's a lot of things that I want to do, and I'm not really sure what sort of opportunities will open up to me, so I'm just waiting at this point. And
good. Do you have any advice for other folks, maybe young folks or especially women, in terms of getting involved in aviation?
The sooner that you do it, the less you're going to regret it later. And so it's something you're going to have to decide whether or not you want it. And if you want it, you should go for it, and you shouldn't waste any time, and you should just do it. I mean, the quicker that you do it, the easier it's going to be. The closer you schedule your lessons together, the less you're going to forget in between. And I mean, it's a thing of dedication. If you like it, you'll really like it, and you'll want to be there, and you'll enjoy every part of the lessons. Otherwise, you won't. And so it's up to you what you want to do. And if you like it, you should go for it. And otherwise, you're going to waste a lot of money.
Okay, good. I think that's great advice, Lindsay. Thanks for talking with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And have fun at the show.
Thank you.
So I'm speaking with B. Haidu. Now, B. has a very interesting aviation history. B. was one of the WASPs from World War II. Hi, B.
Hi, how are you? I don't know how many of you know what the WASP is. It's the Women Air Force Service Pilots of World War II. We were the first women to fly military aircraft.
And you've really flown quite a lot of military aircraft, right?
We flew everything that was manufactured for World War II, from the smallest to the largest, including the B-29. We were formed to relieve men for active duty, and what a lot of people don't realize is that for every combat pilot, you need at least 12 service pilots.
Yeah, that's kind of an amazing number. So of all the airplanes that you flew at that period, do you have a favorite?
The favorite is always the one that I was flying at the time. However,
good answer.
I was supposed to be checked out in the B-25 January 1st, 1945, but we were disbanded December 20th, 44, so that one got away from me.
Oh, that's too bad. Did you ever fly the Stearman?
Yes, we had primary in the Stearman. We went directly from the Stearman into the AT-6. We had about 70 hours in the Stearman.
Now, it's always been my dream to fly in a Stearman. Do you think I have a good dream? Is that going to be a good ride if I do that?
You are just going to love it.
And you're not current, right? You wouldn't be able to take me up.
Well, theoretically, if I pass the physical, I could take you up. But I am 90, and my husband and I stopped flying in our late 70s, so...
But still sharp as a tack.
Well, I don't know. You mean with the flying or the talking?
No, I mean everything about you. Now, you've just written a book, Letters Home?
Yes, and that's based on the letters that I wrote home when I was in service that my mother fortunately saved. And it goes on to say how my husband and I continued flying up to our late 70s.
And is there a message in this book that you're trying to convey to people?
Well, at the end, I'm asked, would you do it again? And I said, in a heartbeat. So my message is, anybody who wants to fly, get out there and do it.
Now, I noticed that you have a medal around your neck. What is that?
This is the Congressional Gold Medal that was given to us in March of last year in recognition of our service, and it was given to all of the WASPs. And incidentally, I can give you my website if anybody wants to look up the book. It's www.wasplettershome.com.
And I understand you're donating some of the proceeds from this book?
Yes, I'm donating it to the Women in Aviation International and Texas Women's University in Denton, Texas, who are the archivists of all the WASP memorabilia.
All right, very good. Well, I won't take up too much of your time, Bea. It's been an honor and a pleasure to meet you, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
Okay, thank you, and you too.
I'm at the Eclipse Aviation booth, and I think there's some exciting things going on with Eclipse Aerospace these days. And I'm here with Mason Holland from Eclipse. Hi, Mason.
Hey, how you doing?
Ah, very good, thanks. Can you tell us what's the news with Eclipse these days?
Well, to coin a phrase from our piston friends, we're firing on all cylinders. So we're having some fun with Eclipse. You know, service and support is back in action. The planes are flying. We continue to complete the aircraft, getting them the things that they were missing from the old days, and having a lot of fun. And we're marching back towards our efforts for production. So we're excited.
Now, fairly recently, there's an announcement about a link-up or some arrangement between Eclipse and Sikorsky. Can you kind of explain what that's about?
The first total Eclipse we sold was actually to the CEO of Sikorsky, Jeff Pino, and he and I became friends, and he had an interest, loved the product, and wanted to get involved with it. So they're a great investment partner of ours, so they've invested capital into our company, which is great. Also, we're leveraging some of their opportunities in their supply chain, in some of their production channels, and, of course, in their products, just in their product distribution for parts and services as well. So it's just... Absolutely, we're ecstatic to have an industry icon like Sikorsky as an affiliate company of Eclipse. It's just huge.
Now, I can imagine some of the things that that Sikorsky brings to the relationship. What does Eclipse bring to Sikorsky?
Number one, excitement. I mean, they've been building helicopters forever, but for these guys to get involved in some fixed-wing opportunities and have some fun with Eclipse. And Eclipse comes with a tremendous amount of intellectual property in a lot of different areas, all the way from our Fostrix designs to the way we deal with friction stir welding, the way our cabins are designed, our thrust-weight ratios that create such efficiencies for us. There's a lot that Sikorsky can learn from the technology that we bring to the table as well. So there's going to be some neat things in our future in the coming years.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And what about the single-engine plane? Is that put off for now?
I have no interest in the single-engine plane. I think it's great, but jet engines need to fly high. If you fly high, you need two engines. So, I mean, that's just me. So that's where I stand on that. So we're more efficient with two engines than what you're ever going to see out of a single-engine jet. At the altitudes we fly and the speeds we're flying now, with the weight that we're able to carry around, because, we're the lightest weight twin-engine jet in the world today. So, yeah, good opportunity.
Are there any current restrictions on the flight for the Eclipse?
Not any longer. The Total Eclipses that we're selling, which are the factory refurbished planes that we bring back through the shop, new paint, new interior, all new avionics, put the engine liners on them to get them back to 41,000 feet, and we put a whole new tip-to-tail warranty on them. We're so we're so confident in our product, tip-to-tail for a year when they come back out the door, and we're just excited to deliver a complete product to the customer now. It's fun. It's fun.
About how many of these jets are currently flying? Do you know what the size of the fleet is now?
Yeah, 260 that we have right now. And I would say the better part of 90% of them are flying. So it's good to see the fleet flying. Now that people know that the product's fully supported, they can get parts and service, you're starting to see these planes fly more and more, and that's exciting.
So looking ahead to 2012, what do you see happening at Eclipse?
Well, we're going to continue our refurbishment plans with the Total Eclipses. We're selling several a month. We only have a couple left for 2011, and then, believe it or not, we're actually out of deliverable inventory. So that's sort of cool. Going into 12, we'll produce a limited number of Total Eclipses. We keep marching towards the production restart effort, so we're working with a lot of our supply chain on that. Of course, Sikorsky's helping out in a big way there, and continue to service the product as well. So you're going to see a new, more technology-advanced aircraft, if you can believe that, of an Eclipse in the near future for us. So we're excited.
Yeah, that's very cool. Very exciting. Did you have to reactivate the supply chain to any degree? Did that represent some difficulties given, sort of the events that had transpired?
Our suppliers are great, and a lot of them lost a little bit of dollars in the under the old Eclipse, and but they're still very supportive of the product. And, fortunately, they're not holding us, hostage to that, and they still want to make parts for one of the greatest planes in general aviation, and we're fortunate to have them. But it has been a little bit of a challenge because you got to get to the right economic terms, and right now this is a difficult environment. But fortunately, people want to do good work with good people.
Great. One last question. Who is your target market?
Yeah, so our target markets are probably in a couple of different areas. One is we are the step-up plane of choice of your guys that are flying these technology-advanced piston aircraft. I know that Cirrus today is announcing their 5,000th piston aircraft. I'm so excited about that because out of those 5,000 aircraft, I know that 10% of them have the means, ability, and desire. They want to step up into a jet and fly a little faster. And there's a big need for safety for those type of pilots. They like that Cirrus plane because of that parachute, and it's a single engine opportunity. They're going to like it even more to fly a little higher and above the weather and have that comfort of two engines. So that's a big part of our market. A little bit of the air limo services that we're starting to see, some fractionals and some charter opportunities throughout the country and throughout the world. So we're in a market all to ourselves right now in that under $3 million twin engine jet place. We're in the right point of the food chain for general aviation right now for us.
So it sounds like things are looking good for Eclipse Aerospace.
We're having fun. Yeah.
That's the best. Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
I'm walking around looking at the booths, and I see some aerobatic planes. And so I look at the sign, and it says Tutema Academy of Aviation Safety. I'd never heard of that. But then it says Sean D. Tucker. Well, certainly I know that name. So I thought we'd ask Ben Freelove what this is all about. What's the Tutema Academy of Aviation Safety?
The Tutema Academy of Aviation Safety is an aerobatic and upset recovery flight school in King City, California, and it's owned by airshow pilot Sean Tucker.
Wow, amazing. I wasn't aware that he had a school going. How long has this been in existence?
The school was founded in 1997, and back then it was just basically Sean and one Pitts that he flew when he wasn't flying airshows. About 5 years ago, we partnered with Tutema Watch Company to essentially build the program and sort of change the school into what it is now.
So how many instructors are there?
There's three instructors, two of us that are full-time, and that's pretty much it.
And how about the aircraft?
We have three airplanes. We've got an extra 300L and two Pitts S2 biplanes.
Yeah. Now, are you a pilot also?
Yes.
And are you aerobatic or not?
Yeah, no, I'm one of the instructors at the school, and so I'm a full-time aerobatic pilot.
So what sorts of people come to a school like this to learn aerobatics? Is it people who are interested in competition or just you know, regular pilots? Who comes to the school?
We get a wide variety of pilots, everywhere from student pilots that want to get a little bit of upset training, all the way to people working on low-level air show and high-performance formation flying. We get customers from all over the world, so it's a lot of fun to fly with people from all walks of life.
Is there one kind of standard program, or is it tailored? How does that work?
We have three primary programs. One's a five-day aerobatic training course, and we have two confidence training courses, which are spin and upset training courses. And then we also do custom flight training for people that want to do formation or something more specific to what they're looking for.
This sort of sounds like flight training, but with a little bit of extra fun stirred in.
Yeah, lots of fun stirred in. It's all about the fun, actually. There's a lot of safety stuff, but we enjoy the kind of flying we get to do.
So, do you do aerobatics yourself just for your own pleasure, or do you compete?
I do fly competition aerobatics. In fact, getting ready to go to the U.S. National Aerobatic Championships next week in Texas. So, and I've flown air shows in the past. So, anything that has to do with an aerobatic airplane, I'm in.
That sounds great. How did you get started in aviation? What was it that kind of, you know, pushed you towards that path?
When I was a little kid, I was obsessed with airplanes. So anything that had to do with airplanes and flying, I was into. And then shortly after high school, I was completely broke, but for some reason thought, you know, I'll go take a flight lesson and then somehow scrape together enough money over the next couple of years to finally get my private. And then I took an aerobatic lesson sort of on a whim and just fell in love with it. And that's all I've wanted to do since.
And so how long have you been flying aerobatics?
I've been flying aerobatics for about 12 years now.
Great. All right. So how can people find out more information about this school?
It's real simple. Just visit us on the web, www.tutimaacademy.com. And that's T-U-T-I-M-A for Tutima. Otherwise, just you can search Sean Tucker, and that's one of the first things that will come up.
Yeah. Fantastic. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, well, there's no way I was going to leave the AOPA the summit this time without stopping at the Kestrel booth, and I'm here with Alan Klatmeyer. Alan, what are your customers looking at these days?
Well, first, thanks for stopping by. It's a good show. Glad everybody's here at AOPA. What people are looking at, obviously the main draw is the Kestrel, the large single-engine turboprop we'll be doing, but the second part of our display is the AeroWork side, which is focused on the modifications that we're going to make to Meridians and possibly Cirrus and other airplanes of the future.
Now, this is something new, correct?
Well, we announced it at Oshkosh, and the logic behind it is that there's engineering that we need to do for the Kestrel that would apply to other airplanes sooner, as well as, obviously, the revenue part, which is good. But probably most important is that it gets us in touch with customers flying single-engine turboprops, and it's part of the learning experience. So I've been flying a Meridian now for several months, and it really has been fun. The performance is compelling. I still fly the Cirrus SR-22 that I have a lot. But the extra 50 knots spoils you in the pressurization and the range, so I really like what the Meridian can do. But I also, in flying it, see the things that should be improved. Obviously, part of what we're doing at AeroWorks is redesigning the instrument panel, which Piper's already done if you go buy a new Meridian. But on the old Meridians, it's one of those things that I'm trying to fly an instrument approach behind this old panel thinking, we could do this better.
So broadly, what kinds of improvements are you looking at in the instrument panel?
Well, again, the AeroWorks side of Kestrel for the Meridian will be basically focused from the front seats forward. And that's, I want to think of it as the whole cockpit. It obviously starts with the instrument panel and a more modern ergonomic glass cockpit. But we'll also be looking at things like seats. How do you get in and out of the front seat? I have a sore back, and lifting my leg over the spar gets hard. Visibility, interior touches. So a lot of those kinds of things as well, which, again, we believe then apply to the logic of the Kestrel, although obviously being a much larger airframe, it's a different kind of issue getting in and out of the front, for example.
And how about other aircraft in the future?
Well, obviously the Cirrus is one that we would look at. There's a lot of older Cirruses out now. The 5000th airplane has been delivered. That there are things that can be done better, and there are a segment of customers that would want it that way. So there's always, even in automobiles, you know, kind of the custom house and the manufactured one, and we think that there are some of those things we can do. That falls a little bit more into the distraction side of it, though, so that while we'd like to do it and we think we can do it, it's not our main focus because the Meridian stuff is so closely tied to the development of the main project.
Now, on a personal note, I understand that you're quite a collector of airplane models. Is that right?
Yeah, I've gotten one of my forms of brain damage. Yeah, it's a little die-cast airplane. So.
And how many models do you have?
Probably about 800 or 900. I've lost count.
Yeah, I understand you even have some that are still boxed that haven't come out yet.
Yes, yeah. In the basement of the house, I have all the ones that are in the boxes that there isn't space for. But and what I always tease my wife about it isn't a collection unless you've got the right distribution. So I can't I can't bypass the right one, even if I don't have space for it.
All right, very good. Alan, thanks a lot. I know you're very busy. I'll let you get back to your customers.
Thank you. Glad you're here at AOPA.
I'm speaking with Laura Gardy about the Air Race Classic. Laura, can you tell us a little bit about what this event is?
This is the all-women's transcontinental air race. It's the 36th year for it this year, the 2012 race, which starts in Lake Havasu, California, and goes to Batavia, Ohio.
And the reason for the race?
Just to have fun, a fellowship for women pilots, and a challenge for women pilots to complete a four-day VFR cross-country race.
And how many entrants do you typically have?
Typically about 50 teams. A team is comprised of at least two women pilots.
Well, that's enormous. That's quite a crowd. There must be a big sort of logistics effort that goes with creating this.
There's an all-volunteer board, and we spend most of the year getting ready. And then once we have the race in June, we start right away in July planning the next one.
So what kind of aircraft do people fly in this event?
Typically single-engine piston, non-turbocharged, 172s, Pipers, 182s, Moonies.
Now, is it an actual race with a winner?
Yes, it is an actual race with a winner. It's not who can get from the start to the finish the fastest. It's who can have their best time with the handicap for their airplane. So each airplane is handicapped to find out what its standard performance is, and then your job as the pilot is to find the best winds and the best weather and better your handicap time by the most points.
That sounds like quite a challenge.
It is, and there's a lot of strategy involved too, because the race only takes about 2.5 days to fly for most of the pilots, but you have 4 days in order to really tweak your weather and decide when you're going to leave versus when you're not going to leave to wait on better conditions.
And what are the dates of the next event?
The next event is June 19th through the 22nd, 2012.
And are you a pilot yourself?
I am a pilot myself. I've flown the race 5 times.
And how did you do?
I placed in the top 10, 4 out of 5, and I was last 1 year.
Last 1 year? What was the reason for that?
It was a calculated last. We made a poor decision on the weather, and we had to set down and route and wait for better conditions, so we decided that was the safe way to go. And,
safety first.
And I'm just as proud of my last place as I am of the top 10 finishes.
Fantastic. And how long have you been flying?
Since 1988.
Wow. And what got you interested in aviation?
My grandmother soloed a J-3 in the 40s, and that's the story that I grew up with. So when I was in high school, that was one of the options for school, was to pursue aviation as a career, and that's the way I went.
So, was it a struggle for you?
Not really. It was a financial struggle. I was a teenager working a part-time job to pay for flying lessons, so that was maybe the bigger struggle. There weren't very many women, especially not young women, but that's changing rapidly in the 20 years since. So.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe not enough, but it is changing.
It is changing.
So, when you're not working on the air race, what's your involvement in aviation?
I am a master flight instructor. I have 4,000 hours of dual given. My husband and I own an FBO in Northeast Indiana. I'm the airport support network volunteer for our airport in Auburn, Indiana. So I'm at the airport every day.
Wow, that's fantastic. So is there a website where folks can learn more about the Air Race Classic?
AirRaceClassic.org.
Very good. That works very well. How about your FBO? Do you want to plug that?
Oh, I can. It's Century Aviation at DeKalb County Airport in Northeast Indiana, Auburn, and the airport identifier is GWB.
And is there a website for the FBO?
FlyWithCentury.com.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks, Max.
I'm speaking with Mark Robideau. Mark is with PilotWorkshops.com. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you, Max?
Great, having a great time. The show is good. How's the traffic been at your booth here?
Actually, it's been pretty good. I mean, it's been pretty steady today, so we're very pleased with that.
So tell us about pilot workshops and what that's all about.
Well, most people know us by our pilot's tip of the week. We send out a weekly email. It's a free email. And we provide, short 2-minute focused pilot tips, and that's how most people know us. We've got about 90,000 subscribers to the tip of the week.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. That's a lot of pilots.
Yeah, you know, it's been great because we haven't been to a lot of shows. We're basically an online business. This is one of the first shows we've been to in quite a while, and what's been nice is we've been seeing so many of our customers and our subscribers come by and say hello. So this has been a really good, coming out party for us, if you will.
Yeah, and it's nice to have that kind of feedback from your customers.
Exactly. So that's how most people know us. And then, beyond that, we have a number of proficiency training programs that we've put together that we deliver either online or as CD-based programs. And they're a combination of multimedia programs that you watch on your computer or audio programs that you listen to in a home or car stereo. Our stuff runs on, iPhones, iPads. So we cover all the bases in terms of the new devices.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's one of the themes that I'm walking away from in this show is I'm seeing a lot of iPad, a lot of, that kind of format being used in a variety of different ways. So was that a difficult thing for you to embrace that, that kind of hardware?
Well, not really. I mean, we're definitely a technology company. We've been around for 5 years, so most of our content has been developed, fairly recently. As the new standards come out, as iPad became a more common standard, we were able to fairly quickly convert all of our, formats over to the new standards. So it worked out pretty well. But our stuff is mainly about proficiency training. So, we're not at all focused on how to pass the test, how to pass the check ride. There's a lot of great products out there for that. We're more focused on if you're an existing pilot. We focus very, very. We have a real focus on with instrument pilots. So we've got a couple of different programs for instrument pilots. We've got our IFR proficiency series, which is a whole library of content broken up into small segments. And we've got a monthly scenario based training called IFR Mastery, which has been very successful. We've launched that fairly recently. So we definitely cover and we're focused on flying better, flying safer.
And I see you also have an aviation weather series.
That's right. That's a new series that we just came out with recently, and it features Scott Denstead, who most people know him from IFR Magazine, and he's definitely one of the gurus, if you will, of aviation weather. So we're proud to be working with him.
So I see these CDs here, or are they DVDs?
It's a combination. Some of them are audio CDs, and some of them are CD-ROMs. So most of our programs we deliver. We give it to you, and you can consume it in multiple formats. You can, a lot of content you can listen to because, you have idle driving time. Other content is focused on, multimedia computer workshops. And then others, you can download to an iPad or an iPhone and consume it that way.
Well, that's great. You have a lot of different options for how you can absorb the content and learn from it.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thanks for talking with us, and enjoy the rest of the show.
Thank you very much, Max. Nice to talk with you.
As I was walking around, one booth kind of caught my eye. It says Voice Flight Systems. That sounds kind of interesting. I'm here with Tom Hamm from Voice Flight. Tom, can you tell us what is Voice Flight?
Voice Flight is a small box that mounts up under the dash of your aircraft and allows you to enter waypoints and edit your flight plan on a Garmin 430 and 530 WAS unit.
Enter by voice.
We allow you to simply press a push-to-talk switch and speak in the waypoints, such as Hotel Foxtrot Delta Enter would enter in the Hartford VOR. So we've addressed two issues with the Garmin 430 and 530. One is all the knob twisting that it takes to enter your waypoints. It decreases situational awareness while you're entering your flight plans in flight or editing in flight. So by being able to just simply speak your waypoints into the pilot microphone, you can keep your head up and maintain situational awareness while you enter your flight plan, edit your flight plan. The other benefit of the Voice Flight system is we add Victor Airway support. The 530 and 430 units don't have Victor Airways support. So we allow a pilot to enter the entrance point to the Victor Airway and the exit point, and our hardware and software expand out that Victor Airway into all the various waypoints in between.
Now, I've run across voice recognition software in other applications, but I think those have been, you know, at my desk with my PC. I got to believe that the environment in the airplane is not really the same kind of thing. Is this different in order to accommodate that?
Yes, very much so. The speech recognition system in here, all of the software is proprietary due to that harsh noise environment. Also, we needed a speech recognition system that was very reliable. We couldn't afford a lot of misunderstandings. So the software was all developed by our founder in-house. It's been put through FAA testing. It's the only certified speech recognition system on the market today. We have an STC on the 182 and an AMLs in review right now for all other aircraft under 6,000 pounds.
Now, is this just a product for English-speaking pilots?
At the moment, yes, it's for English-speaking pilots. However, we debuted it at Oshkosh, and we had hundreds of people from all over the world come up, and it works well with various accents. In fact, we actually had a pilot, a captain from the Belgian Air Force, come up and tried it, and it worked flawlessly with him.
Oh, that's very interesting. That's cool. What form does this take? What you know, when you buy this product, what are you buying? What does it look like?
It's a small metal black box. It's just under 5 inches long, 3 inches wide, and 1 inch high. And it mounts up underneath your dash or on the sidewall of your plane, out of the way. You don't need any access to it. And then there's a USB jack that mounts into your panel to allow for software updates or navigate updates.
So you can we can expect firmware upgrades, things like that, and those are easily downloaded?
Exactly. There's firmware updates will come free of charge. They'll be posted on our website. Also, to support those Victor Airways, we have navigation data, and we're in the business of selling hardware, voice flight units, so we're not in the business of selling data. So our nav data updates are up on our website, and they're freely available. We don't charge for that at all.
How's the reception been? Tell me something about your customers. What are they like?
Well, the reception's been extraordinarily positive. People are just very impressed with this. Anybody that's got any experience with a 530 or 430 are just absolutely exhausted with twisting the knobs. So they're very happy with that. We've also seen customers that fly a lot of Victor Airways on the East and West Coast are very happy with the unit because of that Victor Airways support. It's a big convenience to them.
Are there different models, or is this one model? And what's the pricing like on this?
Okay, it's a single model. The MSRP on the model is $29.95. It's all through dealers, and then they bundle in the installation on top of that.
That's great. Okay, thanks. And the website where our listeners can learn more about this?
Great. It's www.voiceflight.com.
Great, very easy. All right, thanks, Tom. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
After I finished talking with Tom, who walks up but Max Trescott? And he was very interested in this product, so Max and I kind of went through a live demonstration, and Max even tried to do it himself. He even tried to stump the system. So here's Max experimenting as sort of a total newbie with this product.
People typically mount that. Is it going to be a separate yoke button?
Okay. Yep, separate yoke button. And then again, the other major feature is the Victor Airway expansion. 530 and 430 don't come with Victor Airway support. Right. So let me erase this flight plan and we'll start a Victor Airway.
Built in that capability with the Victor?
The Victor Airways are built into our unit. Right. There's nav data updates available every 30 days up on our website, and the updates are all free. We're in the business of selling voice flight units and not nav data.
So you're doing for the 430 what Garmin couldn't do for the 430 then.
Exactly. We looked at the 430 and the 530 and said they're great units, but there's two weak points to it. Yeah. It's all the knob twisting to enter the waypoints, which I just demonstrated.
Right.
And the second one was the lack of Victor Airway support. So we'll put in a Victor Airway right now. We'll go Hartford to Palm Beach using Victor 3. Start new flight plan. Hotel Foxtrot Delta enter, Victor 3 enter, Papa Bravo India enter, And that just put in about 30 waypoints all the way down to Palm Beach in just a couple of seconds. And that would have taken easily 10 minutes.
How long, Max, how long would that have taken you?
Oh, you'd never do it. I mean, if you had to put in 30 waypoints, you wouldn't do it. You'd, you know.
Put in a few, fly for a while. And then inevitably, you're going to get an amended flight plan somewhere along the line. So let's say they redirect us here. Select Sierra, Sierra, India, enter. Erase remainder.
Confirm erase remainder.
And now I can put in the new vector that ATC gave us.
Does it work on my voice as well? That's what I want
to
know.
Sure, it works on anybody's voice. There's no teaching required. You're more than welcome to try it.
Okay.
Here's what we'll do. We'll start off by erasing this flight plan. So what you're going to do, you're going to hold this button down, say start new flight plan. Okay. A voice will come on telling you to confirm you're starting a new flight plan, and you double-click this to confirm.
All right.
So start new flight plan.
Okay, now you realize sometimes I'm scared in the airplane, right?
Start new flight plan. Now you got to hold the button down. Start new flight plan.
Excellent. So even when I'm scared, it understands it. Okay.
Now here's a bunch of waypoints for you to just. We just printed out 500 waypoints around the Hartford area for you to work with.
Oh, what the heck, Bob.
So you just hold it down, say the waypoint, and say enter at the end of the waypoint.
All right. So I can start with my home airport if I want to.
Is it around here?
It's not going to. You're just a local database.
No. The way the speech recognition works to increase the precision. It's looking for waypoints within 250 nautical miles of its current location or the last waypoint entered. So as you put in waypoints, it paints across the country.
So let me try my home airport.
Sure.
Just Kilo, Papa, Alpha, Oscar, enter.
There you go.
Ooh, my Alpha became an Echo.
Try that again.
Kilo, Papa, Alpha, Oscar.
Enter.
Kilo, Papa, Alpha, Oscar, enter.
No.
I think it liked my scared voice. Let me try that. Kilo, Papa, Alpha, Oscar, enter. it didn't like my scared voice. All right.
But Alpha doesn't sound bad.
So is it gonna? Why don't you go ahead? Is it gonna have West Coast Airport in there? Because that's
Kilo, Papa, Alpha, Oscar, enter. Oh, that's on the West Coast?
Yeah.
Okay, that's why it's looking for something over around this way.
Right.
Yeah, because it's looking for something. Let's do Boston. Start new flight plan. Kilo, Bravo, Oscar, Sierra, enter. Yeah. So, yeah, if you want to put in, anything around here, like Albany's Kilo, Alpha, Lima, Bravo.
So I don't even need to scroll the cursor down. It's just going to insert.
It's gonna put it
everywhere. How nice. So I don't really need to worry about cursor position.
No.
Oh, perfect. All right, good. Hotel, Alpha, Bravo, Alpha, Golf, enter. Excellent. Alpha, Sierra, Hotel, Whiskey, Yankee, enter. 9, Bravo, 1, enter.
Again, if you want to enter multiples, you can just hold that down and just keep going. Yeah. If you want to erase a waypoint, you hold the button and say erase waypoint.
Okay. Erase waypoint.
Yeah.
Erase waypoint. Okay, so it takes the last one.
It won't erase this one because that's on your active leg. You'd have to say start new flight plan to
right,
get rid of that.
Okay. Well, that is really, really, really slick.
Thanks.
Yeah, it even works when I'm scared. I mean,
it does.
The best,
very well.
That's the best part I like about.
Yeah, and again, the 250 nautical mile limit is there just to increase the precision. But again, you can paint them right across the country. Like here's a list of Victor Airways. You can't get all the way across the country with 31 waypoints, unfortunately. That's a limitation of the Garmin. Like here's Hartford to Memphis. Start new flight plan.
Confirm.
Hotel Foxtrot Delta enter. Victor 3 enter. Sierra Delta Zulu enter. Victor 5-4 enter. Hotel Lima India enter. Mike Echo Mike enter. So that's all the way to Memphis. So again, the way it works is it's 250 nautical miles from your current location or the last waypoint entered, and it just keeps going.
The Aviators TV series has completed 2 seasons so far, and I'm talking with Wayne Ellis about the program. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Max. How are you?
Very good. Enjoying the show so far?
Yes. It's a great show here, and it's great to be in Hartford, Connecticut.
Despite all the rain.
Right on.
Yeah. So tell me, what was the genesis for the Aviators? How did the concept get started?
Well, the Aviators has been a dream for about 4 years, and our sub-theme is the people, the places, the plains of North America. And its foundation began as I say, 4 years ago, and we got on the highway of producing a television program, and we've completed that journey on the highway, and we're now working on season three. The makeup of the program is it's a 13-episode series for each season, and we have season one and two that are now completed. We're also available on iTunes this September, as well as Hulu. Worldwide, we're also on the Discovery Channel in Europe, Asia, and Australia.
So you've got worldwide distribution of this program.
Absolutely, and that's going to increase after the film festival in Cannes, France, where we're going to increase our distribution.
Can you give our listeners some sort of examples, ideas of what they could expect to see on a program?
Well, it is magazine style, and by that we mean it's fast action. In the 30 minutes that each episode contains, you'll see a variety of topics. We don't stay on one topic at each particular moment. For instance, program one of season one has seven different segments, and so on and so on. So it's a variety of very interesting general aviation topics. You name it, we've filmed it, or it's on our schedule to film for season three and so on.
Very good. So we can look forward to a third season then.
Absolutely. As I say, we have season one and two now on cassettes. Season two started airing September of 2011. Season three will air September 2012. And we have some of that already filmed and a lot of it in final stages of planning for season three.
So who's doing the production work? Is it just some folks interested in aviation or a professional production company? How does that take place?
Well, it's a professional production company. The executive producer is Anthony Nally, who owns Four Points Multimedia Corporation. And we have offices in Vancouver, Toronto, and Oshkosh, Wisconsin. So it's we have a host of different people involved in this show, and all have aviation experience. 98% of us are pilots.
So it's not I guess my point is it's not a bunch of guys who are just, you know, unfamiliar with aviation trying to play in the game, but it's people who understand and are passionate about aviation.
Absolutely. Most of us are airplane owners as well, including myself. Anthony has a pressurized 210.
Yeah. What do you fly?
I got into aviation very late. I'm a retired school principal, and I fly an advanced ultralight, or LSA, and it's called a Savannah.
I'm not familiar with that. What makes, I know what an ultralight is.
Yeah.
What makes it an advanced ultralight?
An advanced ultralight is an airplane that has a maximum weight of 1,320 pounds. And my airplane has a range of 480 miles, and so it's quite a good little thing. But anyway, that's aside. You'll see the Aviators is doing a session on ultralights and LSA, so because we know that that's a very fast growth area of general aviation.
Yeah, maybe a little bit more affordable than some other forms of GA.
Exactly, and that's why it is so extensively followed at this particular time. And there's a lot of people who can. In the United States, it's a little easier license to get than it is to get a private pilot's license, and the same goes in Canada.
Is there a favorite episode of The Aviators that you have, or a particular story that really kind of struck a chord with you?
Well, that's a great question, Max. I think in season one, I like the episode where the private pilot who is sitting on a commercial flight in an Embraer is called upon to take over the controls because the pilots experience a problem. That's a good one.
And that's a real-life story, or is that just a hypothetical?
That's a hypothetical.
Okay, it's what would you do and how would you react in
exactly,
that situation? Probably
yes.
Something that every pilot thinks about.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it would probably be a dream, but a nervous situation.
Of course.
Anyway, it is a good one and very popular with all of our viewers. Very, very popular. In season two, I have to tell you that there's no doubt about the fact the series that we filmed at Miramar is my favorite because that was an absolutely outstanding day. The Marines don't normally let people come in there and film, but because of the quality work that we've done in the past, they gave us permission. And what a day.
Sounds fantastic.
Unbelievable. And to be on the site where Top Gun was filmed, to be in the Top Gun prep room, pilot prep room, and to talk to Rocky, the commanding officer, and other pilots, and actually film. We've got some great interviews there. By far, that happens to be my favorite.
I can see why. I mean, military aviation is always exciting, and to be in there right in the middle of it and have access to that kind of material, content, people, that's got to be a kind of a thrill of a lifetime.
Yes, it was quite interesting. Our when we received permission, our timeline was 8:30 to 12. Because the commanding officer, we supposedly had to leave by 12 because the commanding officer was going to be doing an inspection of four F-18s who were doing a dogfight over the ocean. To make a long story short, we left at 5:45 that night, and he still didn't want us to leave.
Oh, that's fair. So everybody was having a great time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had a wonderful time there, just wonderful.
So let me ask you this. For you personally, what got you started in aviation?
I'm a retired school principal, and I got into aviation very late in life. I had been retired and was loving what I was doing. I was working for a multimillionaire in my first year of retirement, and a year after that I decided to pursue my license, and then 2 years later I ordered my plane, and because of my education background I began offering safety seminars to pilots. And the Anthony, the executive producer of The Aviators, attended one of my seminars and said, I want you on my team. And thus, that brings me to The Aviators. And I love what I do for The Aviators.
That's fascinating. And, that strikes a personal chord with me because I'm not a pilot yet. And you're living proof that if I can, wait a few more years till I retire when I have some more time, and that's still plenty of time to pursue a pilot's license.
Yeah. This show is actually making pilots. We've received feedback that...
Oh, interesting.
Yes, people have... And that's one of our goals, too. We're not just hitting the pilot audience. Anybody who's interested in general aviation will love our show. But we've received feedback as a result of seeing our show, that people have gotten off the couch, got themselves to the local flight school, and started to pursue the lessons to obtain a pilot's license, which
that's
is
perfect.
Outstanding.
Yeah, that's kind of the best result almost that you could achieve.
Yeah.
So the website, www.theaviators.tv.
Perfect, Max. You've got it, right? And we welcome feedback. We really, really do love the feedback that we get from our viewers. And we get some great, great comments.
That's always nice to see, especially when you put so much effort into doing something. Are you involved in other forms of social media, Facebook or
Twitter?
Oh,
yes. Our website receives in excess of 2 million hits a month.
Wow.
Right? So we're very proud of the fact that our viewership is in excess of 5 million. And this program is just literally taking off.
And can folks find program schedules on the website
You can look on the website, and we'll direct you to the variety of channels that we are available. Here in the United States, it's PBS. As I say, we're on 255 of the PBS outlets, which is fantastic.
Not all of them, but a lot of them.
The majority. We're 80%, which is great. We're very proud of that. We're on Discovery, Europe, Asia, and Australia. We're on Hulu. We're on iTunes.
Well, I was going to ask you about those two. So if you happen to be, unfortunately, in an area that doesn't have a channel where it appears, does that mean you can go to iTunes or Hulu and watch the episodes that way?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, here's a little bit of an invitation for all the listeners out there. You can go on iTunes. The first episode is free. We know you're going to like what you're going to hear and see. And then you can get subsequent issues at a very, very reasonable price, which makes it affordable.
I love that. That's a great idea. All right, Wayne, thanks for talking with us.
You're welcome, Max. Thanks for sharing, giving us the opportunity as The Aviators to share with your listeners.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Airplane Geeks podcast.
You can find all our episodes, as well as show notes, at airplanegeeks.com. Our email address is thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. And we also have a listener line where you can leave us an audio message. That number is 361-GEEKS-01. Opening and closing music is provided by Brother Love. Find him at www.brotherloverocks.com.